Good morning, good afternoon,
Good evening, wherever you're watching us from in the world. It's a pleasure to be here with my colleagues, Daryl and Ed. And today we're going to be talking about the future state of project management. There are many topics to unpack here, but one thing is for sure. The future of project management is obviously going to be an improvement. Think about it as version N.0. Wherever N is along the timeline. There are a number of things we have to unpack for you today. The first one is going to be about the world of artificial intelligence, because obviously artificial intelligence will change the way we do business as project managers. The second thing we're going to talk about is the evolving world of stakeholder management, emotional intelligence, and data. Data is the new currency. And last but not least, we're going to talk about the world of hybridization. There's so much to unpack, but I want us to get started talking to who I call our AI genie in the bottle. That is Daryl. Daryl, what do you think the world of project management is going to look like from an AI standpoint?
With AI being part of our lives, our personal lives, I believe project management will fall into place in the next year, maybe, or 2 years, to be aggressive. At a less aggressive perspective, it'll probably be 5 years for project management to actually implement and adopt AI into that space.
How do you see the world of project management being bettered by AI? Is it going to make us lazier? Is it going to make us dullards? Or is it really going to add some sort of value? If so, Daryl, what kind of value do you think it will add to us?
Now, that is a very debatable topic, Phil, and we can definitely go down the rabbit hole with that. The answer to that question, it's all the above. And not to bash on project managers, but it's who we are as human beings. You know, we are all that, and some of that. So I believe that we as project managers will probably come together and create some set of global AI principles and frameworks in project management due to that human perspective that she just asked.
Do you think that the world of project management truly is going to be made more efficient or more effective? What are some of the thoughts you have, Daryl? Don't hold back, because I know you. We all know Daryl. Daryl's got all these ideas, but he often likes to hold them back. Right, Ed?
100%, Phil. I'm waiting for him to get loose. So come on, Daryl.
Come on, Daryl. Let's go. Talk to us.
In my opinion, personal opinion, I believe in the next 5 years, it will probably be some sort of co-pilot in project management. And this is more sci-fi, Star Trek vision of mine. It's going to be just like Jarvis from the movie Iron Man in regards to project management and how it will impact decisions, critical decisions in project management. So I hope that answers your question, Phil and Ed.
You're getting there. You're getting warmer. You're getting warmer. We're trying to get you there, but totally agree. I believe that things will become a lot more easier for the grunt work of project management. So, you know, my ideas, Daryl, regarding AI, while I get excited, I try not to get too excited because I know that a lot of project managers are not even using the basic technologies available to them today, because their basic technologies available, there's software, there's tools, and you speak to PMs, they're not doing risk management sensibly. They're not doing costs. They're not doing schedule and scope is by the seat of their pants. So I look at how PMs approach their work today, and based on that, I don't get hyper excited. I know there's always going to be the top 2% that understand how things should work. And at this point, I want to bring in our buddy Ed, because Ed, you have some insights based on PMI's awesome work that they've evidenced. The top 2% of project managers are not those who are able to do the best Gantt charts, right? They're not those who are able to do the best budgets. Ed, shed some more light on the future of project management based on the lens you're looking through right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Phil. I think, you know, when you look at this thing that I love, that I hope who's ever listening that is not part of this community called project management that you fall in love with, one of the biggest components is the people piece. And with people, everyone has their own intention. So when you look at stakeholder management, you unpack it in a three-part. I look at it as a three-part form, or you could just say from a high level, let's say emotional intelligence. You have stakeholder management, you have conflict resolution, and change management. These are the components that I want to look at. But let's unpack conflict resolution. A lot of times, and my brother held me to the fire on this one, when I said all conflicts are not bad, but there are some conflicts that are bad, that are toxic, that can really, in a sense, disrupt the momentum of a project. And so one of the things, I know we get all this technology, I know we're getting all of these amazing tools, however, the opportunity to communicate effectively with another stakeholder is going to be important. Okay, you don't like that. Let me unpack this. So this professor did this study where there were two students, and these two students, he said, hey, have a conversation between you guys. I don't care what you talk about. It doesn't matter what it is. And they struggled. So I said, huh? He said, okay. So he took two chairs. He set them down. He said, okay, I want you guys to sit back. I want your back to the other person's back and pull out your phones and start texting. And next thing you know, they're having a fluid conversation through text, through a medium of text. And so nowadays, it's going to be important that the various mediums that we communicate on, that we have to ensure that it fits the need. I always say, know your audience. When you don't know your audience, you come in and say anything that, but and then you lose the audience because they're not aligned with the focus of what you're discussing. So going back to that scenario, they had no issues of texting back and forth, but verbally they lost that medium. And so what I want to ensure that we do with emotional intelligence, when you look, when you have conflicts, it's not always about, I'm just going to turn the other way and not solve it. Because as you know, when we don't get to the root of conflicts and we have a surface layer approach to it, the conflict seems like it continues to bubble up and up until a point where now it's become a toxic environment to work in. And so you have to ensure that you are aligned with your stakeholders. Now transitioning into change management. Change management from a standpoint, and I'm talking from a people standpoint, not from just change management of, hey, we need to make a change on this particular project. I'm talking about change management for people. The ability to guide teams and stakeholders through changes with empathy and, watch this, emotional support. I know that's the big word of the day. Anytime I say emotional support, we're gonna go like this, or put a one in the comments, because it's important that we don't lose that aspect of the transition. Anytime there's change, you have to support that emotional factor, because people love being comfortable. I love to be comfortable, but Phil always makes us uncomfortable. We're uncomfortable today. We had to do a lot. Phil thought of a strategy. We're executing it now. But the whole point of it is that it's important that we understand the value of the emotional support that's going to be required, and have empathy with people that you're working with. Here's my last and final point, Phil. I won't hold you too long. Collaborative decision making. You see, I didn't say collaborative change making. There's a difference. We know decisions and choices, I should have said. We shouldn't have, there's a difference. A choice is that you have options. A decisions you've made, you cut off everything else. You said, this is it. This is what we're going forward with. If this doesn't work out, we have the ability to pivot. However, you still need that feedback. How do I get that feedback? Well, we have a transparent approach where, of course, I know your feelings are going to be involved, but I'm not attacking you Mr. or Mrs. Stakeholder. I am tackling the work. I am discussing the work. And when we're discussing the work, I am showing you, hey, this is this, but I don't do it every 6 months or every quarter. I do it repeatedly. So this doesn't look new to you. This doesn't look like, oh, now all of a sudden you're saying, no, I'm giving you positive and I'm giving you areas of opportunity for growth. Who doesn't want to grow? I know there's some out there that don't, but for those who do, it's an opportunity for you to learn from an aspect of how can I get better in this particular area of what I'm doing. And if we're having any challenges, how do we attack them so everyone, so we don't disrupt the team? Because I've seen teams been disrupted because of choices instead of coming together of a collaborative decision making where everyone is on board. Now, of course, we know that we're not going to get everyone on board, but we got enough on board in which showed good behavior, which those other ones got in line and said, yep, you know what? I see that it's working. Let me just go ahead and move forward. Those are my thoughts, Phil, right or wrong, but that's what I was thinking at the time.
I love it.
Ed, brilliant. I want to unpack and interpret it in more of a Joe Schmo fashion as far as what I understand what Ed was explaining. As people and as human beings, we were taught three things growing up, being raised, wherever you are: reading, writing, and arithmetic. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, I believe, based on my research studies and test cases using AI and in project management, both professional and personal, I believe there are four C's. And the four C's are: one, critical thinking; two, communication; three, creativity; and four, collaboration. Now, those four C's, I believe, will be empowered to everybody as us humans will adopt AI in the near future. So
I love that, Daryl. Can you reiterate that, Daryl, one more time? That was great. What are the four C's again?
Four C's are critical thinking, communication, creativity, and collaboration. And
I love it.
I believe that as human beings, we're paving that path for the restructuring of our brains and our minds of who we are as human species. And project management is going to play a huge part, because project management is everywhere. You know, you can dissect it down to ancient times. That's how they built the pyramids. That's how they built Göbekli Tepe. Everything that you see around you is a project, because it has a start and a finish. And I'm going to bring it back to you both.
I love it, Daryl. So what you said is extremely profound, and I would like for us to digest that, unpack that a little bit more. Let's dive a little bit more into why what you said is so important. The PMI did some research, and what the PMI found was that the top 2% of project managers, as voted by their colleagues and peers and bosses, are those that have superior communication, leadership, collaboration skills. And these are the top two skills for the lifeblood of any organization. You can have great people, but poor communication, it will amount to nothing. Great people, poor collaboration, you have another Tower of Babel situation. And that's why I always say the education system has missed it, because the education system is so focused on the knowledge. But the knowledge without the collaboration, without the communication, is useless. So our focus for the future definitely needs to be on communicating more effectively. And that's why when I see people jubilating about AI, getting excited about AI, I say, what on earth are you getting excited about? You can barely write one sentence clearly. You're getting excited about more technical babble? Come on now. Use AI as a communication tool, as a collaboration tool, as a critical thinking tool, and as a creativity tool. Let me unpack this very quickly. Number one, some of us can barely spell our names. Let's be honest, I'm one of them. Sometimes I forget how to spell, but AI can help fact check your spelling. Okay, that's number one. Number two, when it comes to collaborating, a lot of times we think we have all the ideas, but I want to announce to you, you don't. AI can accelerate how effectively you as a team collaborate by asking it the right questions, by prompting AI the right way. You can have a windfall of collaborative ideas. It could ease the schisms and the difficulty. If you want to know more, ask us questions after. Critical thinking. AI can also take your already existing ideas, and through the power of great prompt engineering, you can have a good idea being blown out into a great idea. And these are things that I coach. I'm not going to go into all the details, but I want to challenge you to think about the future, as Daryl has highlighted today, as not being in the tool. It's about what the tool can do for you. Ed touched on the importance of communication and stakeholder engagement, but AI can facilitate these things for you. You see, the problem, guys, is what I see with a lot of people. They're getting all excited about, oh, AI is going to do this technical piece and that. But they forget what makes companies truly great is not the technicality. If that was the case, IBM would have blown Apple and Microsoft together and OpenAI all out of the water. It's not about that. Not to mention the Google boys, right? Instead, we need to focus on using technology to become stronger together, communication, collaboration, to get it to help us critically think. Have AI challenge your thinking. And then build on that, the product of that, make it a geometric progression. Take what AI has given you, build on it as a human with great EI, emotional intelligence, put it back into the mix and get more creative. Take your creative ideas and prompt engineer a great prompt that will give you a mind-blowing response to your creativity. You know what I found? And Daryl, you tell me if you found this. Ed, tell me if you found this. But I found that whenever I have a good idea or a great idea and I give it to AI, whether it's, yeah, Daryl, you know all the names, Claude, Bard, Gemini, GPT. Well, what are the other names, Daryl? Help me out.
There's a tons of large language models out there that will help besides, you know, Claude 3, Gemini Pro, ChatGPT 4. Everybody is exploring every possibility of how AI can help in their personal life and professional life as well.
Isn't it? And I'd like to say a shout out to our friend, Living the Agile Mindset. What an awesome name. That's what we're talking about. Great to see you, Living the Agile Mindset. And our other friends who are joining by LinkedIn, and our friends who are joining by Instagram, our friends who are joining on all the platforms. You know, we're keen on knowing what you are thinking. You know, what are you thinking about the future of artificial intelligence, the future of collaboration, the future of project management? We want to know. But Daryl, all the regular suspects you mentioned, thank you for that. Our goal shouldn't be to just use that for the technical piece. Do you see people falling into that trap, Ed, of, oh, well, AI is going to do all this technical stuff for us, and that is the pinnacle of it all? Do you see people falling into that trap?
Yeah, I actually do. And it's funny because it kind of reminds me of when Microsoft Project came out for people that were starting to do build schedules. And it made me realize when Daryl showed us actually how you really truly build a schedule, people didn't approach it like that. When I was building schedules, I never approached it in that manner. So I wasn't leveraging the tool properly. And a lot of times we get these tools and we don't leverage them properly, meaning we understand this is a tool to help us grow, but we still got to put in the proper data. We have to be able to disseminate that information with the proper stakeholders. It's sort of like communication. Some people prefer a verbal conversation versus if you send them a long email, they'll check out on you. So you may have to send them a high level in Teams to say, hey, this is what we're talking about, and check this out in this particular email. So yes, I definitely agree with you, Phil.
Absolutely, Ed. And honestly, based on what you just said, that is probably why the Teams and the Zooms of this world are adding their AI component to summarize what is being said. Right now, we already have the closed captioning on all these because people know why they're there for the meeting. It isn't just to talk about stuff. It's to really collaborate and let that stuff marinate. You know, my buddy Rick Brinkman, he says, have a flight management system. And all these AI pieces that are being added to Teams and Zoom, they're just allowing people to do a better job in collaborating, because that's the end goal. The end goal isn't to create the next iPhone. The end goal should be, how do we reach as many people as possible with it? You know, like the PMI very recently in their PMBOK 7, I like the way they emphasize the importance of outcome over output. Because a lot of times people are like, well, the project is to create X, Y, or Z. No, newsflash. Future state of project management is understanding that our project is doing more. It's meant to do more than just, okay, here is the output. It's the benefits we're looking for. It's the value. It's the overall outcome. So talking about the future project management, I think our friend Daryl has summarized it very nicely. It boils down to the four C's of communicating more effectively, collaborating more effectively. And talking about collaborating more effectively, another C word that we need to think about is conflict, being able to better resolve conflict. And newsflash, we're going to give you this one for free, right? For free, we're going to let you know that you can prompt engineer a conflict situation in your company. And AI, I want to give some recommendations. Gemini is so impartial that it's almost impartial to a fault, which could be a strong point when you're dealing with conflict situations. You got a conflict situation, prompt engineered into Gemini. You will get some pretty challenging responses, good responses. Put it into GPT, you'll get some good responses, but Gemini is such a good mediator, right? And if you are at a loss for how to do these things, just ask. We'll show you how to do it. But moving beyond this, we have so many other things to talk about. And one of the things that we haven't hit yet is, in the evolving landscape of project management, hybrid is here to stay. Now, this is always a hot topic on social media because we have the agile Puritans. Let's talk about the agile Puritans for a second. The agile Puritans are those who think project management is useless. Hey, let's speak to you, project management bashers. You know, there's some people who think project management is, what is that? Why isn't everyone agile? That mindset and behavior is actually not agile, because agile is able to adapt and morph as the situation demands. For example, one of my buddies, Colin, he does all these big old schedules, and he said, Phil, for a nuclear plant shutdown, this is probably one you want to do with a predictive mindset. You want to plan everything down to the last 15 seconds. And I could absolutely understand what Colin was saying, because agile is not for every single project in the framework. But I will say that agile should be on the menu for every single project in the mind state and the philosophy. Your philosophy needs to be agile. Your framework may not be agile. Your framework could be hybrid. In fact, for many projects in the future, it's going to be hybrid project management. So let me unpack what I'm talking about very quickly. The evolving landscape of project management, hybrid is here to stay. The traditional office setting, of course, is going away. So talking about hybrid, we could talk about a new state of hybrid work. But we could also talk about a new state of hybrid frameworks. So in focusing on agility, right, the rigid approaches are predominantly out. We want people to embrace agile frameworks like Scrum or Kanban and incorporate that into their traditional frameworks as well.
Bill, that can is I kindly what the interrupt future you was. And Go ask a question? Since AI has been drilled into our brains, you know, due to social media, you know, you turn on the TV, you go on YouTube, you go on TikTok, at any social platform, can you dive a little deeper about what is meant by hybrid? Are we also talking about automation within that environment?
Great question. Thank you, Daryl. And I want to say a big shout out to my buddy, Hector. Hector, good to see you. I've been seeing the good work you've been doing in your PMI chapter. just keep on doing that great work. And I think my buddy Lee Lambert is going to be featuring, hopefully, in the future with you guys. Very good. Thank you for that. And our friend Diane, good to see you. Diane, once a project is started, it has defined scope. I think we should think about portfolio. Great point. Well, let's unpack these one by one. So, Daryl, going back to your question about, does that include automation? Now, talking about frameworks and hybrid frameworks, automation is already on the menu for every framework. Think about it, Daryl. Let's talk about the automation when it comes to Agile. We know the boy, the Jira boys, the Atlassian boys, they've already begin to work with that, with their own AI spin on things. When you take a look at Microsoft, just the regular Microsoft Office, they're already beginning to incorporate a lot of AI. So talking about hybridization at the technical level, I think that is already fair game, Daryl. It's part and parcel of what we do. That, in fact, going back to what Ed was talking about, data, the whole data proliferation, I think it's just sensible to incorporate the world of technical into any framework. The question should be, how can we take what we're doing today and automate it? Why wouldn't you automate, Daryl? What are your thoughts on that? Why wouldn't anyone automate?
That's a good question. And that question can be looked at as good or bad. Starting with the bad, it can take away jobs, you know, like the junior project schedulers, the junior project controllers, even the junior project managers, even to the point, to the extent of the new up and coming project managers, because at that level, unfortunately, businesses and companies are always looking for the cheapest dollar out there and the cheapest resource. So I believe in the next 5 years, to be less aggressive, I believe those types of jobs will get taken over by AI.
Absolutely. I mean, we're already seeing that in the other mundane, well, I hate to say mundane industries, but there's some industries that just have a grind to it, just a grind. And, you know, we have poor humans putting in 24 hours almost every 2 days, 12-hour days. We want to take that away and maybe direct their efforts on something more productive. You know, talking about the Maslow's pyramid, we want something that will add to self-actualization, a better level of satisfaction for those people. So to your question, Daryl, absolutely. When it comes to hybrid, technology has been on the table. It should remain on the table. It should actually be more accentuated because we can use technology for so many things. We can use the power of AI. You know this, Daryl. We can use the power of AI for so many things, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, Phil, I definitely agree with you. And for this quick, small commercial break, I would like to let everybody know is a half a day project management 360 conference for newbies on project management May 4th. That is Saturday, ladies and gentlemen. May 4th, Saturday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let me tell you what Phil is doing for us at a savings of 98% off. You can't beat that. $10. $10, you know what, I know the cost of living of things are just getting more and more expensive. I mean, $10 now is almost a cup of coffee. So why not come put something inside your body besides some coffee? Put something in your mind that allow you to grow. Phil is throwing everything at you. He wants to over-deliver, and he is definitely going to be doing that. So we're talking about Agile here. He's going to give you an opportunity to learn just the fundamentals of Agile. He's giving you two books as well for the journey. It's only 4 hours. 4 hours, you can sit through this because it's going to be entertaining. There's somebody got people you see here speaking currently is going to be speaking as well. We want to have fun. We don't want it to be a dry, dull. We're going to open up the PMBOK and no, this is going to be engaging. Our goal, we're hoping that when you walk away from here, you're able to take that information and apply it. Just don't listen to it. I don't want you to get caught up in listening to us and you don't take the information and go and apply it. So for my newbie project managers, even seasoned project managers, we can't act like we're too good to be to not be here. So even my seasoned project managers, $10. That's 2-5 or 10-1s, however you want to get
and
it.
Honestly,
done.
Ed, you know, thank you for hitting the nail on the head because it should have been $750. So it was first $10, and every day folks delay goes up a little bit more. So now it's $19.99, and it's still going to keep climbing. So we encourage people to jump in while you can just do it for a couple cups of coffee. I mean, you go to Starbucks. Can you actually leave Starbucks like full without less than a $20 bill? I don't think so. So that's the idea. But thank you for bringing that in, Ed. We're really looking forward to seeing those of you who have signed up. But I want to really touch on a few more great points we had here. Let's first of all talk about what Deanne said. We had a good point about the world of portfolio management. I want us to tackle that for a little bit. And he says, once a project is started, it has defined scope. The next thing we should think is the portfolio. I think more about portfolio adopting Agile. Wow. It's like you've been in my head, my buddy. Because what I've been thinking about for the past number of years, along with my buddy Roy, is how we can take what we do in the real world. Because I know a lot of people already do this very well. They manage portfolios that are of an agile nature. But that understanding is still foreign to a lot of companies. A lot of companies are using a traditional portfolio management approach, talked about in PMI's portfolio guide, to manage their portfolios. The good thing is that PMI is working on literature that will come out in the future regarding more agile approaches to doing this. But right now, I want to encourage anyone that is managing a portfolio of endeavors to just apply whatever you apply on a lower level as a product owner, have a more grander level idea as a portfolio manager to brutally kill what is not productive. A lot of times we get caught up in the sentiment of, oh, we've been working on this for the past 3 years. It's a dead end. Kill it. Cut it off. As a portfolio manager, you have to be extremely aggressive. So that is a topic that we're going to unpack on a different day. But Deanne, I want to thank you for chatting in your thoughts, because not only are we handicapped in many companies with portfolio agile, we're also handicapped with program agile. And my buddy, Roy, he's very good with this stuff because he's been doing this for a while and he has his own frameworks and methods. So this is a good prompt for us to get Roy on the program to talk a little bit more about things like this. Hector says 100% hybrid PM is the future. Absolutely. It is the future. We totally agree with you. And then we got some other chats in that I want to feature on the screen from Hector. Hybrid project management blends elements of traditional, like waterfall and agile. Absolutely. So thank you, Hector, for that, because I know people are like, okay, what is hybrid? Hybrid is a flavor of project management that blends the best of both worlds. It blends the world of traditional or predictive project management, where everything might be planned out, and it blends the brilliance of agile project management, where we're thinking more about individuals and their interactions over processes and tools. We're thinking about working product, right? Over comprehensive documentation. We understand the value of a working product. We understand the value of customer collaboration over contract negotiation. We understand the value of responding to change. And honestly, that is the thesis for the agile mindset. Responding to change over following a plan. Because we don't want to be like the Kodaks of this world, right? We don't want to be like the Toys R Us's of this world or the Circuit Cities of this world who were not able to effectively adapt. So when we talk about the world of hybrid, as Hector is saying here, it's combining the best of both worlds, combining the agile-mindedness, combining predictive. Now let's talk about why predictive should not be demonized. It should not be demonized because, like the example I gave you, a nuclear plant shut down, it has its place. In construction, it has its place. But at the same time, my friends in construction know this. I wrote a book very recently, and it's called Agile in Construction and Linear Environments. So in that world, there is a ton of opportunity to be more agile, right? There are opportunities you can just sneak them in. You just see them in plain sight. This is an opportunity for agile. We don't want to miss those things. Hector says, this approach allows teams to customize their process, maximizing the strength of both approaches. Absolutely. Right on the money. And he says, it may or may not include AI and automation. And some people don't have the bandwidth to do it well. You know, my mindset is whatever is worth doing is worth doing well. Don't do a crummy automation implementation. But as much as possible, I want to encourage people, and I'm sure that Daryl and Ed share the same thoughts. You know, we're just talking about somewhere near Ed's house. They have taken the manual way of doing things at what is the fast food joint, Ed, that is doing this?
McDonald's.
McDonald's
full automation. So
they've cut out all of the, you know, human hands handling your food. What are they doing, Ed? Tell us.
So basically what they did is they have a smaller square foot print for the automation. There was only one manager there. There was one cash register there, but they had all these kiosks set up for you to go and punch in your food. And once your food is ready, it slid down this, I don't know what deal you want to say. You pick it up and you go. When you go through drive-through, they ask, hey, did you use the app? Because if you use the app, all you have to do is just really go around the drive-through. But they reduce the headcount within the facility. So now with the reduced headcount, I mean, you don't need all those people to run the dining room floor as you would see, because I would normally see anywhere from 3 to 4 people, like 2 or 3 cash registers, and they replace all that again with kiosks. Mm. So
honestly, and this brings up a good question, our viewers, and thank you, NC Worker. We see you. Great to see you. Our buddy NC Worker has been a really great viewer on a lot of our channels. So good to see you. And honestly, I'm curious to know from you folks watching, is this a good thing for business? Is this a good thing for the world where instead of having people handle your food, think about it, be open-minded, people handle your food who may not have the best intentions. That's all I'm going to say, versus having an automated process that takes away that piece. And I'm not saying for every single establishment. So let's talk about Red Lobster, or I shouldn't be giving all them these promos. Let's talk about just any restaurant, right? How would you feel if your waiter was a robot? Where would you go? The robot restaurant or the human restaurant? What do you think? Daryl, what are you thinking? Daryl's mind, I can see his mind whirring away. What would you think, Daryl?
I believe it's going to be a hybrid perspective, both humans and robots, and we're going to have to learn to work with robots and AI agents in the future.
Would you rather go to a robot restaurant or a human restaurant, Daryl? So let me give you this one. A robot restaurant where the food is top-notch, it's a 10. A human restaurant where the food is, it's a 7.
I believe, oh boy, that's a tough question. And the way my mind is thinking is, it's going to be that way in the next 5-10 years, especially now that McDonald's has been on the test phase about it. Even Amazon and Tesla has been doing that. So that would be interesting to fully see, you know, in person, to see how a robot interacting with a robot in customer service will play out.
So Ed, you inspired a book that I'm writing about customer service. You tell me, what would you prefer, 10 restaurant with robot or 7 with a human?
Yes, you know, this is my thing right here. So if I start getting excited, just calm me down. So I would rather go to I'm taking deep breaths as I'm talking, go to a 7 restaurant versus the robot piece. Because I even look at it like this, Phil. When I go to a store and they have the automated checkout, I don't go through the automated checkout. I go through the people checkout. Why do I do that? Well, there were certain things that were happening when people were going through these automated checkouts that they forgot to pay for things and it was by accident. And that accident turned into potential, that company thought they were stealing from them, which again, if you're on the side of the company, you're like, yeah, why you're stealing from us in a sense. So I say all that to say, having a robot versus the people, I'm always about the people aspect of things, because when you go to a restaurant, you're going for the experience. You're not going Yes, you're going for the food to eat, but the experience with it really makes you go out and spend the money. And this is coming from it, like saying, if you know how to cook, or and nowadays, like I said, you can order any meal plan from anywhere and basically won't need to go out. So I would prefer to work with a person because I'm going there for the experience, the interactions, and what did this person, you know, what happened today and things like that. So that's what I would do. What about you, Phil?
Absolutely. Well, for me, if I'm in a hurry, you know, I'm going to do the 10. I'm going to do the robot if I'm in a hurry. But if I want to have, like you said, an experience, I'm going to go to where I may get food that is not as great, but is okay. And I don't want to give any promos, but we have a really awesome Brazilian steakhouse. And if I felt their food was more like a 9 and I had great customer service versus a 10 with a robot, I would go to the 9. 7 is a little bit subjective on the lower end, but I think what is going to happen, based on what I'm seeing in industry, and you can go look up Porter's Forces. But Porter's Forces just tells us that based on the competition in the market space, you're going to see an attitude adjustments to the other business in the market space. So what McDonald's is doing, they might be first to market in that regard, but there's going to be copycats. And then the factors that determine who emerges first are now going to be something different. Maybe they now have to watch how they bring in AI with a human touch. Maybe you include a voice at the register as opposed to no voice, just pick your food and go, or something that will mimic the EI that everybody's looking for, because everyone wants to be heard and everyone wants to be appreciated. It's a very good conversation. We have another one from our buddy Hector, and Hector says, this allows teams to customize their processes, talking about hybrid. Remember, we're talking about hybrid, and he went further to say, could include automation or not. Very good points, Hector. And he says, AI and automation are most valuable when you have too much data to analyze. And that's a very good point. Because, you know, in this evolving world of ours in project management, tech is taking center stage. Project management software is becoming even more crucial. We're seeing I don't want to give them all the promos, but I have to mention them, the ClickUps, the Asanas, the Jiras, the Confluences, so on and so forth, right? We're seeing how these folks are more and more aware of technology. So as far as the point that Hector is making here, not only is tech taking center stage, but as he alluded to, data-driven decisions, they are becoming even more and more crucial for business. So using data analytics to identify roadblocks, to measure team performance, make informed decisions, we see this all the time, which is why data analysis is huge now. In fact, anyone who is not analyzing their data, no matter how big or small the company, they're leaving money. They're leaving millions and billions on the table. So we encourage project managers to have this new mindset, this sensitivity to AI and automation. Hector also alluded to this can help companies struggling to manage their project management portfolios and make data decisions. Going back to Diane's great comment about portfolio management, you got to also put in that spin, right? That spin of data analysis. And Hector says it can also help organizations to make better data-driven decisions. And he gave 5 organizational challenges of this industry we're in. There's a lack of standardization. Hello. Haven't you gone to companies where, you know, you ask them, oh, do you have an approach to project management? And the answer is, no, project managers are mature enough to do whatever they like. What? So that right there is a problem, because there's definitely going to be an accentuation of standardization, even if it is in the world of agile. I know the agile Puritans are going to be mad at this, but even in the world of agile, there should be some order. There should be some structure. There should be some governance. Okay. And then we also have here very good points from Hector. And, you know, Hector's been a PMP. I met Hector, goodness gracious, Hector, that was like 14 years ago. My goodness, it's unbelievable. It's been 14 years. He says, conflicting methodologies. That's true. Just what I was saying. Visibility gaps, resource allocations, conflicts, and absolutely cultural mismatch. Elvis, Mr. Anyawu, very good. Thank you for signing up to the webinar, buddy. We're looking forward to seeing you. And we love it when we see our friends on social media jump in to meet with us live. So just for those of you who have already signed up for the program, we want you to begin sending your questions in, sending your questions for the seminar. We're going to be tackling Project Management 360. This is a little preamble. So Daryl and Ed are part of our speaker lineup, but we also have an additional 8 other individuals who will be on that lineup. So you definitely don't want to miss it, okay? And I like what we have here from our friend Hector. He's giving us some possible solutions to improve this industry. Flexible PPM framework, absolutely. So if you're making things hybrid, make them hybrid, but give people at least a tapestry to weave from. Common metrics, beautiful, Hector, good stuff. Hector says, integrated PPM tools prioritize communication and transparency and foster a collaborative culture. I love it. And jumping off that point that Hector raised, we got to say that communication is key. If you have crummy communication, you will always fail. But with great communication, even if your team is dispersed, you will always come out better. So we want to encourage those friends of ours. Hey, we know you're out there. Those companies, Ed, Daryl, don't you love those companies that, oh, we're having a very important meeting. They meet on Zoom. They show the PowerPoint. Hey, can you imagine how lackluster this would have been with just the presentation showing like this? Without seeing these brilliant individuals, without seeing the contributions coming in from our awesome viewers. How lackluster would that have been? And that's why Alistair Coburn's diagram of how communication gets enriched, we need to be thinking about that. Because communication gets richer and richer as you introduce the visual elements. You know, the great Professor Emeritus Albert Mehrabian, when he did his experiments at UCLA, he found out that when you're communicating and the words, the tone of voice, and the body language, they're not congruent, what do people immediately go for? The body language. It weighs in at 55%. So we have the 55, the 38, and the 7. And whenever you're communicating in any circumstance, people's mind is like radar. They're looking for alignment. And if your body language is, yeah, I'm really glad to be here, they're going to immediately go for the body language, not for the words. They're going to go for the body language. He looks disturbed and not happy. And then his tone of voice is down. So people are always going to try to measure up words, tone of voice, and body language. And the moment they get a misalignment, they are going to go for the body language, which is why the body language is so important for a project manager. Project managers who know their salt, their cameras are on. You know, I have some people say, Phil, in my company, it's not our culture to turn on the camera. I'm like, you be a difference. You make the culture. Your behavior will begin to generate this great culture. So as far as, you know, the future of project management, I see the future tending towards companies saying, okay, part of our policies, cameras are on. Because you're missing out on a huge amount of the message if all you do is hide behind a PowerPoint. If people aren't seeing your tone of your face, they're hearing your tone of voice quite all right, but that's not enough. The body language just takes it up a notch, right? And all the content richness of communicating as we have it in the world today, the chat. Have you guys ever been on any of PMI's lives? Any of PMI's live webinars?
I haven't, Phil.
Oh, my goodness. So yeah. Where the action isn't in the video. The action, the action is in the chat. The action is happening in the chat. I found out that the way people learn these days and the way they communicate in webinars is very different. You know, some people are like, well, I just want to hear what the listener, what the author is talking about. Well, you might be missing out if you're not looking at the chat. Like, look at the brilliance of chat. So this stuff that Hector chatted in, brilliant nuggets. Can you imagine without that? We would have gone in a totally different direction. So what I'm trying to say is that the future of project management is harnessing technology. It's harnessing new ideas. It's harnessing the power of communication using AI. It's harnessing the power of automation. It's also about building trust. If you are looking to go into project management, just understand that trust for a project manager is huge. You know, my mentor, John Maxwell, he would say, trust is like change in a leader's pocket. With it, he's solvent. Without it, he's bankrupt. But how do you build trust for the future project management? It's about doing what you said you would do. It's about being emotionally intelligent and seeking how to become even more emotionally intelligent. It's about regular check-ins, team building exercises, open communication. All of those are essential. Regarding the future of project management, PMs need to hone their digital literacy and remote leadership skills. You know, one of the things that I hate hearing from a lot of our PMPs is, I'm not a technical PM. Okay, do something about it. Become technical. Ed, being someone in this industry, how can we unleash that inner technical giant or that inner technical being that is in the corner? How do we do that? Because I know you and Daryl have done a great job unleashing that technical side. Share with us, how do we do that?
You know what, honestly, Phil, it's really about listening actively, asking questions, things. You know, people forgot to be a kid again when it comes to, especially when it comes to technology. Any technology, like you have these little kids nowadays that you could give them a phone and they could figure out in an amount of time how to send a text message, how to make a call, because they're curious. They're just playing around and figuring out things. And I think what tends to happen is that we automatically shut down and say, oh, I'm not that, you know, don't come for me. That's not what I do. But how did you get to doing what you are currently doing? Okay, you don't like that. All right, let me slow it down. What I mean by that is that when you learned how to ride a bike, you had to fall off or you had to make some mistakes. So going back to Phil's question of the technology aspect, you have to make some mistakes. You have to call things that maybe somebody's going to laugh at you, but you're learning. So I think as we get adults and we get these little fancy letters behind our names, a PMP or MBA or BA, whatever the thing is, we forgot what we came for. Oh, I like that line by you, Jay-Z, because we came here to learn. We're project managers, or just somebody that has a learning mindset is going to constantly want to learn. And you don't have to go as deep as being able to write code, but being able to understand from a high level is good enough unless that's the thing that you want to dive into. So I'll leave with that, Phil.
Phil and Ed, and I think AI is going to challenge the status quo of project management, because if we just discuss all those types of issues of human behaviors, you know, the whiners, the peacemakers, mm-hmm. robots and machines don't have feelings. So as a business owner or a company or a huge organization, they're going to cut the people that are whiners and replace them with robots in the near future. And that's where I believe AI will start to challenge the project management environment as a whole. And it will readjust how we plan, execute, monitor, and control, even close a project down to the details.
Wow.
Great. Yeah, I agree with that, Daryl. Because it is amazing how. But the question I have back to you is, with that being the change, how do you think people are going to adapt to the change effectively without getting so lost in the adaption process, meaning trying to learn everything? It's sort of like the shiny object syndrome. You're learning this one, then you never have an opportunity. I don't like using the word master, but never have an opportunity to really have a deep focused learning. So how does someone really continue to move forward with these changes and everything?
I don't think we're able to answer that as project managers or even as human species, because like I said, AI is here to stay, and AI will challenge, you know, the way we think, the way we're wired, even structured, to the point where feelings and the behaviors of human beings are going to be challenged in the next future, probably in the next 2 years. Elon Musk just recently tweeted yesterday that he thinks artificial general intelligence, which means an AI will hopefully think on its own and do things on its own by getting or by receiving a task from a human being, it will be implemented or incorporated into our society by next year. Wow. And that's pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
Now, with AI researchers and me on and just unpacking the AI environment, that's really impactful and that's really aggressive as far as the prediction of where AI is going to be implemented into, you know, the human species. Pretty much, the words of David Shapiro, we are creating our successor species as of right now. And it's going to be interesting to see.
I definitely agree. Good.
These are really great points and sobering points. Now, that last comment you made, Daryl, is that something that we is that something we should be sad about?
I'm reading this book by Alan Turing called the it's about why we think the way we think, or, you know, can machines think. It's making me going on this rabbit hole of the cognitive architecture of the human brain, because it's going to challenge us. It really is. And as project managers, are we ready to accept that and adopt that? Because by all means, we're not accustomed to change, no matter who we are or where we came from. We love drama. We love being, being the center of attention. We also love the convenience of almost everything we do. So even when AI is going to be slowly trickling into project management, AI will be, I'm trying not to be aggressive, you know, to keep away from being, you know, that conspiracy theory person. But I think automation and like I said, the mundane tasks as project managers will get taken over by AI in the near future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We see that happening for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, still on what we're saying right now, the world of AI is evolving, and this is something to get excited about. This is an opportunity for PMs to hone their digital literacy, remote leadership skills, the ability to manage virtual teams effectively. This is an opportunity, but you got to adjust your palate. Hey, PMPs, those of you who are just lazy, people are going to say I'm being mean, but I got to be honest. Some PMPs are lazy. Let me tell you what the average PMP does. And my buddy Lee Lambert, he says they're paper PMPs. There are a lot of paper PMPs. They get certified. That's it. The next thing is, give me a job. Give me more money. More money. Okay, what can you do for the firm? I'm a PMP. Don't you know I'm a PMP? Okay, what can you do pragmatically speaking? I'm a PMP. And they wonder why they're at the same level. They wonder why they're not being called for interviews. It's because they are lazy. We want PMPs, as my buddy Lee Lambert, one of the founders of PMP, as Lee said, you got to go beyond being a paper PMP. Hone your skills. Do what Daryl and Ed just told you. Lap this stuff up. Stop giving us the excuse, I'm not a technical PM. Become one. Learn technology. Ed hit the nail on the head. We're not even saying you have to code. But apply yourself to learn. Otherwise, you're going to be in the same position. You're going to be in the same position. When I was at Honeywell, I was in defense and space. The job went away. 3 days later, I'm at Honeywell in IT effectiveness. How is that? Because I prepared myself to understand IT and technology. So when the opportunity came, I was immediately able to blend into it. I was able to show my technical prowess. I want PMs to do the same thing. You're PMP certified. Stop saying, oh, I'm PMP, give me more money. Stop that. Stop it. You can barely add a penny of value to the firm. You being there, they're actually doing you a favor. I'm just being honest. I'm being honest. Okay? So we want to encourage PMs to go beyond, I'm a PMP. We want them to begin to equip themselves better. Now, when it comes to security, the future of project management is going to be even greater, accentuated with security matters, right? With a distributed workforce, cybersecurity is top priority. Last week, we just had our friend Eniola Delano speak to us about the CISSP, CISA, and this world. It's evolving, and it's going to catch up with you eventually, right? We also have not only this world of cybersecurity from a profession, but as project managers continue managing projects, they are going to run into this world of security. So don't wait till then. Okay, I'm going to get off the technology train because I know some people are running away. They don't want to talk about technology. That's okay. Let's go to employee well-being, right? Recognizing the challenges of remote work and prioritizing employee well-being is huge. How many of you folks on the call work 12-hour days? If I get any less than half, I know that you're not telling the truth. I know many of you work 12-hour days, but it's important that we balance up this awareness that if we're working remote, we are actually, in many instances, working harder. I'm going to say that again for my CEOs and my VPs who are on the call. Come on now. If you are making your people work remote, newsflash, your people might actually be working harder. The reason why your people are working harder is they feel more comfortable in the environment and there's less urgency to run back home. So instead of them working less, they're actually, in many instances, working more. I'm not saying it's a one-size-fits-all. I know you got the employee who, you almost need to call him into the, Phil, we ain't seen no deliverables from you. There's some, Ed, you work remote. Ed, tell us about this.
Yeah, I was waiting for the alley-oop on this one, Phil. Yes, I do. I do work remote. And, you know, for someone like myself who, fortunately and unfortunately, is a talker or someone that would love to engage in dialect. When I was working on site, it got to a point where my manager even came to me and said, hey, listen, you got all these people coming up to your cubicle. You're still getting the work done, but it's becoming a distraction to other people. And it was hard because, you know, as a project manager, one of the biggest things is communication and having that ability to build a personal relationship with your stakeholders, because when you need to call in a favor, they're there to support you. They understand that it's a balance of both professional and personal. So to Phil's point, yeah, I actually work in remote, get more done. And I actually can get it done faster because now I'm really focused. I started recently using two techniques. And if you don't mind, I'd like to unpack them here, Phil. So one of them is the Pomodoro technique. So what I would do is like when I have to put out my meeting notes and updating my risk register and my issue log and my project management plan, I block off 25 minutes on my calendar, set my little timer and go 25 minutes deep focus. Oh, wait, I forgot to tell you my secret ingredient. My secret ingredient is putting my phone in do not disturb, because if you don't do that, I don't care who you are. You may be the most focused person in the world, but one of those things could, notifications could catch your attention. And at that point, you're stuck. Like, should I respond or should? So I eliminate all of that, so I don't have that tendency to do that. And literally, I've really found out how valuable that has been to me as far as a project manager, having the ability to really just focus in on a thing. And I'm actually getting, there's certain times where I get things done faster. And then there's certain times where now I've got it done. Now I need to go look at something else because I need to do a deeper dive on it from more of a, because you know, I work in cybersecurity. So it's like, I need to do a deeper dive into the information that I'm looking at. And I have that window because I'm focused and I'm really locked in there.
Good back stuff, to you, Ed. Thank you for bringing that up. That is such a brilliant technique to share with our people, because I know, you know, what I get from a lot of firms is, I have all this work to do. How do I focus on getting the right thing done at the right time? And, you know, there are two things. The first one is, you got to be good with a product owner mindset to be able to prioritize. Then when you prioritize, as Ed said, then you need to go for the jugular. You got to go for the annoying little distractors. So you got to use the Pomodoro technique, right? And this technique, it breaks work down into intervals. And this is so helpful for those who are distracted. I first of all learned this from a buddy, Roy. You put aside however long your time box is. So how long is your time box, Ed?
Actually, 25 minutes.
25 minutes. 25 yeah. is a sweet spot, because you've got 5 minutes, you know, before your top of the hour next meeting or whatever that might be. And you just go for it. And there's a way it works. And let's tackle the way it works very quick for those who haven't heard about it. So as Ed alluded to, you want to choose a task. They actually have these Pomodoro timers, these tomato timers. But what you use a phone, did you say,
Ed? No, I actually use the app, the Pomodoro, like you said, the tomato
timer. Pomodoro app?
Yep.
So use the app. Good. Yeah. And is that available for free on like
Apple? They have a free option and a paid option, but the paid option is a couple bucks. What's a couple bucks that you know for you that you could turn around and potentially Absolutely. Make more money off of? So
get the Pomodoro app, my friends. I mean, look, Ed is so correct. I mean, $2. Come on. Then you work until the time rings. But Ed brought up a good point. You got to turn off your phone. That's the piece they don't tell you, because if your phone is on or if notifications are on, you are going to get distracted and you're going to find yourself in the crazy Outlook pit, also the crazy email pit. Don't do that. Shut everything off. If possible, maybe even go to a remote location where you cannot be reached intentionally, right? And then take a short break once the timer rings. Rinse, repeat, track and adapt. Because there are many people like us, you know, Daryl and I, we know we have this issue. Ed, probably not so much Ed. Ed, I don't know if you have this issue, but I have the shiny object syndrome problem.
Yes. Preach this sermon, Phil. Preach this sermon.
The shiny object syndrome, which helps you chase two rabbits, and you know what's going to happen. They are both going to get away. And you're at the end of the day going to be like, what did I accomplish? So you got to use this time blocking. You know, some people already do this, but they call it time blocking. And that's great. So just do whatever you need to do, but block out the time. Honestly, it's like being agile, because in the world of agile, we break our stuff down into iterations. Then we have a potentially shippable increment at the end of that 25 minutes. In the world of agile, it will be at the end of 2 weeks or however long your sprint is. And then just keep on getting better. For me, I realize I have to just take myself out of the environment completely. But when you do that, you get a whole lot more done. And speaking about remote work, which is where this whole talk came up, we're talking about employee well-being and being able to work better, not work crazily harder. The Pomodoro technique that Ed brought up is a brilliant way that you can hone in on those deliverables. And honestly, we're mature individuals, right? Hopefully, many of us. We're mature individuals and we don't need to be micromanaged. We don't need to be micromanaged. We know what to do. And using a Pomodoro approach can help us. The next point before we close today that I want to bring up is being a lifelong learner, as we were alluding to. The PM landscape is constantly evolving. You got to stay ahead of the curve, attend workshops, pursue certifications, continuously learn new skills. If you have not been to an AI training, I want to like shamelessly recommend, go to tinyurl.com/ChatGPTs, I believe, or go on Udemy, you find my ChatGPT course, right? I have courses on AI for people. For those of you who have not attended a PM conference in a long time, as my buddy Ed was alluding to, join us at the 360 degree conference. It's coming up on the 4th of May. Right now, it costs a measly $2. And if you are truly looking to be a lifelong learner, looking to be relevant in the industry, you want to hear about the state of PM. Some of you are new to PM and you're wondering, how do I get into project management? These guys are talking about stuff I don't even understand. Start off at the 360 degree conference. Go to 360.pmradio.org. We're going to be breaking project management down into finer pieces. You're also going to get the two books that I published very recently. And the two books that I published very recently are The 360 Degree Project Manager. And the second one is about the world of professional project management. Like, I was on the sidelines for a long time. I don't know about you, Dal and Ed. You want to tell us how you got into project management? Because for me, project management, I've been trying my best, my hardest, failing at the interviews until I discovered, oh, what I think is project management is not project management. Daryl, how did you get into project management? Tell us.
One of my mentors, you know, sat me down and said, look, you have the skills and your resume, it explains that you have project management experience. Why aren't you a PMP? And that was my very first time in project management. And ever since then, I've been in love with it since that day.
Fantastic. Ed, what about you? How did you get into this world?
Well, Phil, I'm going to say something that's very controversial. So, Daryl and Phil, y'all might want to duck your heads on this. Yeah, you might want to even go on mute because I'm about to make some controversy because I get fired up about these moments due to the fact that there's a lot of claims out here that you can be a project manager with no experience. Oh, you don't like that. You can be a project manager in 7 days and 42 hours. Point I'm trying to make here is that trainings like this, connecting with people like this gives you an opportunity to grasp that experience, to understand the jargon that is being spoken regarding project management. So how I got into project management was literally I seen someone actually doing project management. I got to mirror him, and then I had a mentor. That's that catchy thing of calling a mentor or a coach. And my mentor or my coach said to me, hey, I want you to do this assessment. At that time, I can't think of the name. It was basically a personality assessment. I did the personality assessment, and it came back and it said, here's some of the professions that you may want to look at. And funny enough of it was project management was one of them, and like a CEO and marketing, which was weird. But the whole point of it is, and then I just started doing it. I have to be honest with you, family, is that when I got into project management, at first to me, it was a job. I was doing what I wanted to do or had to do so I can basically take care of my family. And then it went from that to I fell in love with it. And when I fell in love with project management, this is when I started wanting to give back to the community. I wanted to also learn my craft even more than what I've done. Because like Phil talked about, a lot of times, and we've all been guilty of this, we all can step to the line and say, yep, we got those letters. And once we got those letters, meaning we passed that test to get that certification, and all the hard work, the dedication, the tears, the sacrifices that came with it, you're like, oh, now I get to take a break. No, your journey has actually just begun, if we're going to be honest. And because your journey has just begun, there is not a destination. And see, that is a attribute of a growth mindset. You know there is no destination. It is that you're constantly wanting to get better by being a lifelong learner. And this is what also, as you can see, how PMI started mixing in agile, the mindset of agile. So again, you have to be a life learner if you want to fall in love with this thing that I fell in love with called project management. So thank you, Phil and Daryl.
Fantastic. And that's just a tip of the iceberg of the stories that you're going to hear from 8 other additional project managers on the 4th of May. You need to plan to be there, okay? If you have remotely been associated with our training at Praiseon or the Project Leadership Institute, go on right now. We need you to sign someone up. The reason why I'm asking you to sign someone up is you can offer a windfall of value. Like Ed and Daryl have shared how they got into project management. Honestly, if I knew 10 high school leavers, I'll invite them to this session. It's going to elevate them. If I knew 10 people who are already project managers, I would invite them. So go to 360.pmradio.org. You are going to learn not only how to get into project management, you're also going to learn about project management, and you're also going to get two books that will frame the way. And this one, I haven't said this anywhere. This is the secret that nobody knows. Those who come for this seminar are going to get access to a lifetime course. And that lifetime course is going to continually elevate your project management, all for the cost of a measly few coffees. Don't miss up on the opportunity. Please go on down to 360.pmradio.org, and you're going to be glad you did. Right, like today, when you sign up, you immediately get the two books. So you can immediately begin elevating your consciousness. And then when you come for the training, not only are you going to have the opportunity of hearing from us, it's a half-day boot camp, a half-day training. You're going to become a project leader. Because I know project management is like, everyone knows project management. Well, based on what we've shared today, we're going to show you how to truly become a project leader. We're going to be touching on things that Daryl mentioned, the four C's of communication. You're just going to get so good in it. You're going to be aware of how to collaborate. You're going to know the tools of the trade to collaborate. We're going to elevate your critical thinking game with the critical thinking framework we're going to share. Creativity? You kidding? You're going to become more creative because we're going to show you ways to do it that are unparalleled, that have never been shared in a project management conference. Which project management conference teaches you how to be more creative? Zero. Which is why you need to join this conference, my friends. Go on down to 360.pmradio.org. Now we're going to summarize all that we talked about today. We have covered a number of topics, but there are three pillars: AI, leadership, EI, and continuous learning, which is another bucket, and hybrid. Daryl, I'd love for you to wrap up the piece about AI. If you're going to talk about AI in a few more seconds, what would you say to our friends?
Thank you, Phil, and absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for attending this LinkedIn Live session. And as we close this session, I would just like to say, God, we have to stay positive and we have to stay open-minded of AI and how it will change, you know, the project management environment and also as human species. And I give it back to you, Phil.
Thank you, Daryl. Let's bring on our friend Ed. Ed, I would love for you to speak to the piece that covers the world of leadership, EI, data, soft skills.
You know, I'll just start with emotional intelligence. Listen, the critical skill for effective project management and stakeholder engagement is going to be EI, aka emotional intelligence. Some of those key components is, first, self-awareness. Self-regulation. You see, I said self, meaning it starts with you, then empathy, and then the social skills, having that ability to have social skills, understanding certain words and the certain different cultures. Then we talk about benefits, the benefits of an improved stakeholder relationship, conflict resolution, and then, of course, what we touched on about change management. But how is this going to happen? Well, this is going to happen through development, ongoing self-reflection, ongoing feedback, acceptance, and then, again, that key word, the thing that holds everything together, is that continuous learning. So, again, we want to ensure that you start focusing on self first. You know, I always say this every time we get a chance to get on a webinar, when we're on that airplane and the stewardess is talking about when the mask comes down, she says, put the mask on your neighbor. Oh, she doesn't say that, or he doesn't say that. Oh, they say, put it on yourself first. So what I'm saying there is that a lot of this about becoming a better project manager, becoming a better stakeholder, has to really resonate with starting with self-reflection and self-regulation. When we start there as key components, it gives us an opportunity for growth. And when we look at a growth mindset, we understand, as I stated before, it's not about the destination of where we're going. It's about the journey. The journey is what develops us. The journey is what has a true influence and impact, which is allows us to equip other people. I appreciate it. Thank you, Phil.
Phil, before you end that, Ed, thank you so much for unpacking that. And I wanted to bring this out to the audience on the blind spots on my behalf, you know, especially when Phil turned the camera on me, I was stuttering and I was not there. And look how much you unpacked that, Ed. And I wanted to, show the audience that Phil and all project managers, communication is the key, just like what you saw on how I communicated and how Ed just unpacked that entire preaching, of what he thinks. So just keep that in mind, and I encourage you to keep learning.
Well, thank you for the candor. Thank you for the candor there. Ed, any comments?
Yeah, I was going to say thank you, Daryl. And, one of the things, too, though, we have to understand is what I love about how things, Phil touched on about output and outcome. The outcome is what's really important here, and how you deliver your message. Really, I understood the outcome, and I know the audience got it as well. And how I deliver mine is even though it's different, it's like, I play basketball. So I shared this too, is that you taking a piece of paper and me shooting it in the basket versus you taking a piece of paper and walking over and putting it in the basket. The outcome was to get that piece of paper into the trash basket, and we achieved that today. So I hope today that we achieve that. If you think this is good, we got something in store for you, mate. Forth, I promise you, we're going to show up and show out. I promise you, we're going to over deliver you. I promise you that we're going to give anything and everything that we got when it comes to this thing that I love, that I hope you guys can figure out a love for, called project management, because we're here to actually deliver for Phil. Until next time, go ahead, Phil.
I appreciate you, Ed. Thank you very much for that. Now let's talk about the final thing. The final thing we're going to talk about here is the world of hybrid. So you've heard from Daryl and Ed, and the final prong is hybrid project management. Stop being an agile elitist. Stop it. Stop being an agile snob. Stop being a predictive snob, thinking, oh, those agile people are a bunch of jokes. They're a bunch of jokes. Agile, you want to do agile? Agile is rubbish. Agile makes no sense. It's funny. It's like, try this. How do I put it? It's like racism in a tribe. You're in the tribe of Agile, and you have people saying, well, I'm for Scrum. Kanban is stupid. And then you have someone saying, Kanban? That isn't even it. It's all in the TDD. Those don't even mean anything. That is just, it's just wrong and dumb. Don't do that. Stop criticizing frameworks. Start hybridizing the way you work. Begin to hybridize. Begin to see project management as being the word that we would use in a religious circle would be ecumenical, which is bringing in different flavors. Not agile is the only way, and it has to be Scrum. Or Kanban is the only way. Scrum is stupid. It has a time box that no one obeys anyway. Or predictive is ridiculous. It's miserable, and it's equated to drudgery. That is a very myopic mindset. Have you forgotten that project management has existed even before the word agile was coined? I'm talking about way back in 2560 BC, the pyramids of Giza. They were already building great edifices, great artifacts, great structures. And they were doing that without the word being labeled predictive, agile. They were just getting stuff done. We need to go back to finding the best mousetrap. And that's why hybridprojectmanagement.com is my domain, because I truly believe in hybrid project management. I bought the domain because I believe in hybridization. And a lot of you don't. A lot of agile elitists are like, I've never heard anything so stupid. What is hybrid? Seriously? you're not being agile in your mindset. If you think hybridization is dumb, then you're not being agile. And for my friends in the world of predictive, if you think agile is not worth anything, you're missing out. Trust me, I've been in the very, very heavy world of predictive. I've done everything from scheduling 20,000 line long schedules to working on very big project management plans to working on earned value to the cows come home. I've been so damaged by that episode that I know all the earned value calculations in my sleep. So don't for a minute think that I can't go all predictive on you. I could. But at the same time, I've seen the light. I've seen the light of agile. Agile thinking is what will change the way many of you do business, the way you will be relevant. Do you know that agile thinking is actually one of the closest things to effective strategy? If you're not being agile, I think we need to have a conversation. Message me and I'll give you a few things to think about. But it's not enough to be just agile or just predictive. We need to put the thoughts together and be more ecumenical. And then we can begin to think about the four C's even better. You see, the four C's that our buddy Daryl talked about in the very beginning, they are accentuated when we put on a hybrid thinking hat, when our communication is more fluid and dynamic. But at the same time, we understand that we need to have a plan for how to communicate. At the same time, we also need to think about collaborating in an agile fashion. People who say, well, we just have one meeting and it's the staff meeting every week. No. Be more agile. Maybe having some daily stand-up meetings will help you. It will help your team synergize. Even if it's for a time period within a project, think about applying the little things of agility to your projects. Think about using a Kanban board. A Kanban board will change the way some of you think and work daily. Now think about the power of combining iterations and increments in something like Scrum. All of these have their place. Kanban is great. Scrum is great. Predictive is great. Combined, they form a lethal cocktail for mediocrity. What you need to kill the mediocrity in your teams is a hybrid mindset. And it will find where all the opportunities are when applied right. It will make you think more critically. It will make you more creative. When you bring all of these together, that is what we see as being the future, my friends. The future of project management is not in software tools. It's not in being agile alone. It is about being a hybrid being. And the reason why I have to stress it is you could be agile, 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 and kill the predictive piece that needs attention. That is stupid. Don't do that. Be hybrid. Hybrid, thinking about artificial intelligence. Be hybrid, thinking about leadership, EI, data management skills, data analysis skills, and lastly, hybrid. All right, my friends. Well, thank you for staying this long. Thank you very much, our buddy Hector, who contributed immensely to what we had here today. Our friend Diane, who chatted in, NC Worker, the others who may not have chatted in, but were there on the sidelines giving us some great advice, some great input. The idea about portfolio management and agile from Diane is truly great, and we need to get our buddy Roy on that so that we can share our framework of how we do that with the rest of the world. For those of you who are thinking of getting into the world of scaling, I just have to tell you straight up, perhaps you want to look into Ken Schwaber's Nexus. Just Google Agile Scaling Nexus. Don't go to the dark side. My Star Wars fans, you know, please don't become the dark side of agile. There's a dark side, and I'm not going to mention it. But if you go to the web and ask, what is the dark side of scaling? You may get the answer. Don't do that. go to Kentraba's site, scrum.org, look for SPS. The reason why I'm sharing this is I truly believe the future of scaling is a malleable, adaptable, and easy to maneuver framework that you can very quickly tier up, tier mid-sized, tier even lower than that. And it's called Nexus. And the certification behind it is the SPS, Scale Professional Scrum. Truly believe in it. I'm an advocate for it. And I would highly recommend that as a starting point. But don't get caught up in using one mousetrap. There's always a better mousetrap. You know what the better mousetrap is? It's a hybrid mousetrap. Thank you, my friends. Thank you for joining us. From my buddy, Ed. Want to say goodbye to the good people, Ed?
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate this opportunity. And again, looking forward to May 4th. So I hope you guys come and check us out. It's going to be a treat.
Thank you, Ed. Darryl?
Thank you again for today's session, Phil, and everybody out there. I just want to say explore more, be more, and know more. And see you on May 4th.
Thank you, Darryl. See you on May 4th, friends. You know what to do. 360.pmradio.org. Bye for now. You take care. Be safe.